Well, thank you very much. I just whispered that I had a much less consequential. I'm not an engineer. My father always wanted me to be an engineer, but I wasn't capable, so I became a lawyer. I remember I had a great idea for a new law firm. I was 27 years old. No one had their own firm. And I went out and I convinced two people senior to me to come work with me and form a partnership. But we had no capital, so I went to a local bank to borrow money to literally just set up the law firm, rent and equipment, et cetera. And they said to me, why don't you come back when you have some clients? So I get it in a very small way. My grandpa used to have an expression, present company excluded. Banks only lend you money when you don't need it. Thank you all for being here. I know you already had a very long day, but I just wanted to thank everyone for being part of this important summit. Leila is a good case in point. She had a brilliant idea. She's a brilliant person. And ARPA was able to help get her off the ground, a little bit of seed money. Federal government can't answer these questions, but it can be an important part of the solution. And Leila's company is now in a marketing phase. And I wish her well and hope a lot of investors say, why the hell didn't I do it at the time? You've heard from the best in our administration about our commitment to renewable energy. Dr. John Holdren, Brian Deese, the president's point man on climate change, a whole lot of people. Liz Sherwood Randall, who used to work for me, young Rhodes Scholar, who came on to work for me when I was in the United States Senate, and now a top Department of Energy official. And you in this room are some of the best minds in the country, leaders of philanthropies, investment funds, environmental organizations, top experts from all around the country. And you've made some incredible commitments, not just today, but in this week, but in the past. To increase the investment in clean energy in the United States of America. So basically, I'm here to say thank you, but also to put in some context why this matters so much to our country. You already know, but there's different angles at which to look at this, in my view. North America is now remain the epicenter of energy for the remainder of the first half of this century, at least, and probably well in the next century. We're no longer going to be talking about the epicenter being Saudi Arabia or Nigeria or Venezuela. North America is the place. And when I say that, and I say it in other contexts in foreign policy, it's everyone assumes I'm only talking about the phenomenal breakthroughs in natural gas and oil, all of which has been new technologies that have been all very positive. But there's another transformational, equally important, thing happening in renewable energy and reducing carbon pollution here and around the world. That is the future. That is the future. A key driver to the development and deployment of clean energy is all of you. Right now, renewable energies, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, you're probably the only people who really know this, generates about 13% of our electric energy needs and about 10% of all of our energy needs in the nation. Since 2008, solar generation has increased 20-fold. Granted, still only represents about 0.5% of our needs, but over time, there's no reason why that can't increase exponentially. Wind power has tripled, representing roughly 9% of our primary energy needs in the United States, but there's no reason why both wind and energy, among other renewables, can't wind and solar, can increase exponentially. There's not a single reason on God's green earth, and you're going to help keep it green, that by the year 2020, renewables aren't double to represent 20% of the electric generation and 26% of electric generation and 20% of all energy generation in the nation. And that, to me, is the floor. That isn't the ceiling. The reason for this is a significant cost in the reduction of renewable energy. Cost per megawatt for wind has declined 50% just from between 2009 and 2014, from $167 per megawatt hour in 2009 to $83 per megawatt hour today, making it slightly cheaper than coal per megawatt hour. And the cost of megawatt hours in solar has also declined by 73%. Still, it's gone from $700 to $184 per megawatt hour today, still more expensive than coal, but that gap is closing because of Lael and a lot of other people, a lot of technology and research that's being done. And so in not too distant future, I believe both will be cheaper than coal and considerably cheaper than coal. In addition, we're using more energy efficiently. The administration, the President and I have been aggressive as we possibly could in developing new energy efficiency standards for household appliances, for example, that will cut 2.2 billion tons of carbon pollution and save consumers hundreds of billions of dollars over the next several decades alone. By 2025, we expect to double fuel efficiency to 54.5 miles per gallon, saving American families $1.7 trillion at the pump and cutting oil consumption by over 12 billion barrels over the lifetime of those vehicles. Nearly a 4 years of gas for every single solitary car in the United States of America today. And that's only the beginning. The technology is changing in terms of hydrogen and other possibilities for automobiles is just staggering. We've made progress, and I want to remind everybody, you know, if I had made this speech in 2006 to you, not even 2009, telling you what would happen, as committed as you all are, a lot of you would have looked at me, you know, they call Biden the White House optimist, but this is out of the park. But I really mean it. It's just the possibilities are so exciting because of all of you. We've made this progress because in combination with the grit and integrity and ingenuity of American business, workers, scientists, engineers, and the political will that we've had here to make some very unpopular decisions, like the Controversial Recovery Act, which I might note for the record, GAO pointed out there was less than one-tenth of 1% waste, fraud, or abuse in almost a $1 trillion program. It actually worked. Even the Conservative School of Law and Economics, University of Chicago, points out that 87% of the economists in the United States now say it saved us from a depression. But whether that's true or not, it worked. In the meantime, in that, we invested over $90 billion in clean energy, the most we've ever invested in the entire history of the United States. We expanded the tax credits for renewable energy production and worked with industries from automakers to appliance manufacturers. Together, we set the bar for new innovation in energy efficiency. And there's so much more that's on the horizon. But just as we got in this transformative moment off the ground, we've ramped up private federal investment. Once again, some short-sighted decisions from the outfit I worked in for a long, long time. Up on the Hill, they're ramping it down as fast as y'all ramped it up. Compare our White House budget with a Republican-passed budget in the House of Representatives. They slashed the Energy Department, energy efficiency, and renewable energy budget by 40%. As my brother would say, go figure. Go figure. I mean, anyway. In addition, the House Republicans have doubled down on sequestration, a word now that every American knows. It's, you know, it's like until you get in wars, you don't know the names of places. Well, until you get involved with you don't know things like sequestration. As part of, it's now part of our political vocabulary, but because they've kept sequestration, despite the devastating cuts in cutting-edge scientific research and development. And as hard as it is to believe, many of these same people continue to deny the reality of climate change. They also deny gravity, but they deny that there's any such thing as climate change. And that's the point is, it undermines the safety and security of the United States of America and every community across the country. As a consequence of this, many investors are pulling back from early stage research in clean energy labs and startups. there's been an 85% decline in traditional early stage venture capital investments in clean energy over the last 7 years. Moving away from early stage companies to low risk, late stage companies. That's not where the future is. And the R&D stage, electric utilities spend less than 0.1% of revenues on R&D, compared to up to 20% of the revenues on pharmaceutical and IT industries, our energy companies. This is a critical, you know, reminds me, I remember back in 1973, I came from Pennsylvania, and steel and coal were a big deal, but particularly steel, and I remember making a speech to the United Steelworkers sponsored by U.S. Steel, and there were 3,000 people there, and I was a young senator. I'm out and I say, you know, in World War I, we made a mistake, and I was being not unusually Biden controversial. And I said, we made a mistake. We bombed the wrong steel mills. And I went on to point out that there had been virtually no innovation and improvement in American steel mills, and they were investing more money in pantyhose factories, than they were in steel, in advance in steel technology. It reminds me of the same kind of thing that's going on now. This is a critical moment for our country, not only for us, but more importantly, for our children and our grandchildren, a phrase we always throw around down here in Washington, you know, concern, but it's literally true. Our children and grandchildren, if we don't seize the moment now, I hope there's never a point of no return, but man, we are getting closer. We are getting closer to not being able to turn around what we all know in this room is a devastating possibility for the Earth. The question is, do we seize the enormous opportunity that's fully within our reach? Do we walk back? Do we walk back from what everybody knows, everyone in this room knows we have to do to address climate change? That's why we convened this summit. That's why we ask you all to come, because you have several important assets. Number one, you get it. Number two, you're fully capable of re-energizing this effort. And number three, you have the capacity, if the commitment is made, to fundamentally change the spiral in the opposite direction. And by the way, it's not only the morally right thing to do, it's not only in our interest of our national security, it's a smart economic play. Almost exactly 1 year ago, I spoke to a conference, Goldman Sachs had a North American Energy Conference in New York, and they were kind enough to ask me to speak. And at that conference, I asked, what's the long play? What's in our energy future? To state the obvious, I'm not an investment banker. But I told the audience, full of bankers and investors, that I wouldn't go long on investments that lead to carbon pollution. I'd bet on clean energy. To repeat myself, why? Well, there's a moral argument, there's a climate change argument, there's also an economic argument. But fundamentally, the argument I'm making is that it really has to do with reality has a way of intruding. Just look at China. 5 years ago, China was building, they still are, but, you know, one coal-fired plant a month. And I remember being in China, speaking with then President Hu about the problem, and it wasn't a problem. Besides, the prevailing winds blew west, and it was on the West Coast. But there's a human tragedy happening in China. 1.4 million people dying from air pollution in 2010, 1.4 million in 2010 alone in China. It's a tragedy but it has realities intruded with severe political consequences if the government doesn't respond. The Chinese people put up with a lot, but they will not allow their government to continue to ignore the human consequences on their health. And so the government's making different policy choices. Reality is intruding. It has nothing to do with making the right decision, wrong decision, the moral decision, the economic. It is a political necessity. Reality is intruding. In the United States, even the climate deniers are preparing for greater impacts and more extreme weather from heat waves, wildfires, superstorms, droughts, all of which drastically affect local security and local economies. As a consequence, Sandy's an example, we're applying new standards to how we deal with the consequences of natural disaster. We've always engaged for the last 100 years to go in and help rebuild communities. But we've rebuilt the communities up to now to the standard of the status quo ante. That's been the measure. That's how you qualify. That's how you qualify for federal help and local help. Between 2003 and 2012, an estimated 619 widespread power outages occurred as a consequence of severe weather, costing the U.S. economy in those years between $18 billion and $33 billion a year. As a consequence, even those who deny climate change, its historical trends, et cetera, you've noticed we don't have a fight anymore. We no longer maintain the standard that existed for the last 100 years of restoring communities to the status quo ante, because we know that's not going to do anymore. There will be other Sandys. If we rebuild Manhattan to the way it was before Sandy, it's going to be underwater as a consequence of the next superstorm, which everyone anticipates will come next week, next month, next year, but it will happen. There's a consensus on that among the vast majority of people who hold public office. That's why major publicly traded companies across the country are pricing the cost of carbon when they make business decisions. Disney uses $10 to $20 per metric ton. Google uses carbon priced at $30 per metric ton. All of you know more about this than I do. You know it's being priced in. The reality is there's a new reality. As the climate is changing, so must federal government policies and private sector involvement. Only with the private sector can we fully or even mostly realize the opportunities of this energy transformation. Government can't do this. Government can't do this alone. We can set standards. We can't do this. The fact is, you're being here today proves that we're in general agreement on that point. Our energy future is in cleaner, cheaper, renewable energy. And all of you understand that clean energy and investments have proven financial and social return, have provided financial and social returns, and on balance, are not much riskier, in many cases not as risky, as other investments. You get it. You've stepped up. And we need you to do even more, because you can start a virtuous cycle here. You know, when we first announced this summit, we internally set a target of having philanthropies and other investors pledge $2 billion worth of investment in clean energy and development. But today, we're able to announce, because of you here, that has been doubled to more than $4 billion. There's many examples. You're all part of them. One is Goldman Sachs targeting $500 million of financing and co-investment in companies that develop and deploy advanced clean energy technologies like smart grid infrastructure, advanced batteries. University of California Board of Regents is committing $500 million and is joining a consortium that will eventually invest $1 billion in companies that are making promising and profitable technologies that address climate change. So many more of you. I probably shouldn't even mention those two, but there's so many of you are engaged in this. The federal government still has a critical role to play, though. Everything from investing in basic research to advanced clean energy technology to expanding and making permanent the tax credits that have led to greater clean energy development. We need you. We need you for not only the reasons you were talked about today, but we need you for your incredible talent and innovation. Look what you've done with Layla. Look what's happened with Layla as a small investment, not small to her at the time, for people like her and all of you across this room. But we need you to continue to work to bring other philanthropies, companies, and organizations on board. And many of you have influence up on the Hill. And when you find out what it is, tell me, okay? No. Many of you have influence up on the Hill. And we need you to make the case up there. Really, we need you to make the case. whether you're Democrats, Republicans, Independents, agnostic, I don't care what you are. But this makes just good, simple sense. I want to make a special reference to the philanthropies that are here. One of the reasons Treasury is clarifying, and you've heard from them in this conference, the rules on what you can invest is because many of you invest, for many of you, the investment is for a moral imperative. That's why your organization exists. And because of your social mission to improve the lives of people around the world. And quite frankly, many of you are leading the way. I want to give, not many are here, but I want to give credit to the impetus that religious communities have brought to this issue. From leaders, from leading evangelicals like Reverend Wallace and many others, to the Pope. I'm a practicing Catholic. I always joked, I say, why am I practicing Catholic? I said, because of the nuns and Jesuits. Well, we got a good one now. But front page of the Washington Post Pope. They sometimes think they're Pope. But headline, Pope urging on climate change, leaked draft of encyclical. Usually encyclicals are referred to are only issued on what the church thinks are incredibly important initiatives. Quote, the poor of the earth are shouting. A draft of a major environmental document by Pope Francis says the bulk of global warming is caused by human activity and calls on people, especially the world's rich, to take steps to mitigate the damage by reducing consumption and reliance on fossil fuels. It goes on. There is a consensus growing. As I said, this doesn't only have a moral component to it. It has a security component to it, as well as it has an economic component to it. The United States is better positioned to lead the world in the 21st century than any time since I've been involved. I got elected when I was a 29-year-old kid, and I was always referred to as the young idealist and optimist. I am more optimistic about the potential for the United States of America today, unrelated to Barack Obama and Joe Biden. I am more optimistic than any time in my life. And I mean that. Just look at the problems that the rest of the world has compared to where we are and what our potential is to help them and us. Over the last 6.5 years, we've gone from an economic crisis to recovery to resurgence. 12.6 million new jobs in the past 63 months, more jobs created than all advanced economies in the world combined. We're talking about insourcing. Your kids aren't going to be talking about outsourcing like an entire two generations did, or one generation at least. It's insourcing. A.T. Kearney surveys every single company invested in, does a survey. I think it's for 19 years now. We're the 300 largest industrial in the world. Where's the best place in the world to invest? By a margin wider than any time they've ever conducted the survey. They say the United States of America, in every sector, from IT to consumer product. It's just across the board, manufacturing. There's an outfit called Boston Consulting. Some of you may use them. They do a survey as well of every company invested in China. They ask the same question every year, and I don't know how many years now, 10, 12 years they've been asking. I asked the CEOs of every one of those companies, what are your plans for next year? 54% say they plan on coming home. There's a reason for this. Jobs and companies are coming back because, one, we have the best research universities in the world. We have the most agile venture capitalist system in the world. The rule of law actually protects intellectual property and contract rights. We have the best workers in the world, 3 times as productive as the workers in China. That's not a criticism of China. I want to see China do well. It's in our interest they do well economically. But they're more productive. And we're in the midst of a once-in-a-generation energy transformation. Energy costs in the United States are 3 times cheaper than they are in Europe and up to 7 times cheaper than in Asia. As a consequence of this transformation, there's a significant opportunity. It means jobs, good-paying jobs, long-term jobs. Estimates of jobs being created in the renewable energy area are staggering if we make the investments. And the confluence of the assets I've mentioned are exceptional at this moment in history. And if all of us in the public and private sector use them wisely, then there's no doubt that we will do right by our children and our grandchildren when it comes to fighting climate change. And there's no doubt we'll remain the dominant economic power in the 21st century. But back to you. They pay me big bucks to be here. You're here because you understand, because you care, and because you have the capability and capacity. And it really matters, guys. It really does matter right now. If we let this languish for another 2, 3, 4 years, it's a lot of space to make up, man. A lot of space. I got a young nephew who's running in the Nationals in high school. He runs the 400. And the coach is talking about, well, all you got to do is knock off 2 seconds. Any of you run track or play football? Knock off 2 seconds of anything, except maybe a mile. And even that's awful hard. The point is, it matters. What you're doing really, really matters. And I want to tell you, you got a partner in us. We'll do everything that's reasonably possible. And there's no pride of authorship here. We're doing things that aren't working. We could do more to make it work better for you all, to make it more attractive to invest and be engaged. Let us know, because this is the single most important thing that Barack Obama and Joe Biden can do in 8 years of a presidency and vice presidency, is to actually get a handle, get a handle, get a handle on climate change. Thank you all, and God bless you, as my mother would say, for doing what you're doing, and may God protect our troops. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.